So, like most people in 2020, I feel like my circles of influence got a little more insular, right? Whether that's unfriending people on Facebook or just retreating further and further into like a smaller sphere of influence with, you know, a global pandemic and stuff like that. But that also extends to kind of my gaming diet as well. Increasingly smaller in interaction with like wider group of people, right? Mostly talking in like group chats, on Discord, stuff like that. And that all sort of changed when, at least for me in terms of Malifaux, when Weird made an official Discord and I was checking that out and I'm like, oh, it's a wider sphere of influence other than the same 12 people I've been chatting with throughout, you know, the past 2 years. And with that, I remembered, I remembered a few things about why I only talk to like a smaller group of people. And that's because sometimes people's takes are so bad that they're incomprehensible. I mean, I'm sure everyone has had this experience if you're listening to me. You may have had that experience about something that I've said. Something that is so so incomprehensible. You're just like, wait, you're just completely stunlocked by the take. You're like, how could he, how could he mean that? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. That does not comport with my experience. There's this podcast that I listen to, and this guy has this phrase that he uses pretty often. It's not less a phrase, more of a general idea, and that's, I'm not saying you're wrong, but you see the world so differently from me that there's nothing else for us to talk about. And sometimes I see that about toy soldiers, where someone will say something, and I'm like, I'm trying to do the math on where that came from, right? You know, maybe this guy only plays against one master, and it's only this master. Or maybe this guy only does this scheme, and he's only, so that's why, you know, that this comes from here. And seeing those kind of takes more, I thought maybe it'd be good to do sort of an episode where I talk about my ideas of where my ideas come from. And in doing that, maybe it would give someone who's listening both a clearer roadmap of why I say something that they don't get or it doesn't comport with their experience, but also like maybe provide sort of an example of like when someone says something and you're like, what? You know, maybe it's because of this, or maybe it's because of that, right? And because all of this is just completely pure opinion, something that's completely unfalsifiable. I'm just talking with myself. You know, I could have invited Jimmy on, but he would just be going, you know, why he's raiding Karazhan or something while I just sort of yammer at him. So if you don't like opinions, turn this off now. If you do like opinions, you know, when I'm feeling opinionated, I might put my, you know, suggestions for how to change explorers or something at the end. Where I think bad takes come from is I think they come from two different places. Or there's two sort of origins for where takes come from in terms of toy soldiers. The first place I think a take comes from is where a person is on a gradient. And often in tabletop games, we use the phrases casual and competitive, right? And I kind of hate those terms because they mean different things in like every different game, right? Like in video games, it means literally how much time you spend doing it, you know? In tabletop gaming, it can mean litigiousness. Like, I know when I played 40K kind of as my primary game, competitive meant litigious. It meant if I play a game with a competitive person, that they are going to, that we are approaching this game from the standpoint of a negotiation. And like throughout the course of the game, we're going to have to debate rules interactions. And that is actually what competitive means. And so I think those terms are a little less useful sometimes, but the way I think about it may even be less useful, but it may be more useful. I think this gradient is more along the lines of how much the mechanic win matters as opposed to the aesthetic of a win. And what I mean by that is, right, if you're playing a game and all you care about is the immediate gratification of winning a thing, you're probably not playing this game, right? There are other ways to just get, you know, sort of feedback loops. Like gambling is probably something that's more along the lines of acquiring mechanic W's. You know, you pull the slot machine, you win or you lose. You pull it again, you win or you lose. You pull it again, you win or you lose. You know, on the opposite end, at least in my estimation, is the aesthetics of the win. If you, maybe you call it sort of winning in style or something, but I believe everyone has a vision in mind for a win in any sort of game that matters most to them. Just for an example, think about if you play like team-based shooters like Overwatch or, I don't know, basically any team game that has sort of roles, right? You could be, you know, there's four people locked in and your team obviously needs a tank or something. And that last person, instead of locking in a tank, they lock in, you know, sniper number three. If you're playing League of Legends, you know, you need a support. There's only one guy who hasn't picked something left and he locks in Master Yi. Think of any sort of role-based game and that's sort of like, well, why are they doing that? We're not going to win, right? That is because, I think it's because of like the aesthetics of it, right? So that person who picked that sniper, right? It's not that they want to win. It's that they want the aesthetics of a certain type of win. They want that headshot from across the map that gets this, you know, crazy kill or something. Or they want to get the quadra kill, you know? They want to win in style. That's also the same with every single objective-based game. Like, say you're playing Halo and no one's ever going for the flag. Why are they never going for the flag? That's how you win the game. You win the game by getting the flag. But that's not in the calculus. Well, I mean, it is in the calculus, but it's on like a sliding scale, right? Everyone is sort of drawn a line where the actual win is important, but only in the context of this sort of aesthetic outcome, right? You know, I'm trying to win, but I'm also trying to like win a bunch of sniper fights, or I'm trying to, you know, kill two people, you know, with one shot with my, you know, from across the map or something. And I think the same is pretty clearly true for tabletop gaming, probably even more so. The W is, you know, getting victory points in Malifaux, but everyone is sort of on a scale of how much the aesthetics matter to them. It could be that they like one master in the fluff. So that's what they play. So that's where they've drawn the line, right? They want the W and they're going to try as hard as they can, but they're going to do it because they like how it looks. You know, they could say, I want to win, but I want to win with the stuff that I've painted. I'm not going to play the unpainted stuff. I'm not going to proxy the model. I want to win, but I want to do it with this faction. This is the one I find fun. I'm not going to play this. Hell, I'm not even going to play this master in my faction because other people do. And I want to be not unique, but I want to try and blaze some trails, you know? That's what I'm trying to do here. I want to not just repeat the machinery of a successful combat, but I'm trying to like figure my way through some jank, and I'm trying to score some points that I probably shouldn't have. And I'm trying to go for some low odds plays and get red jokers. I don't think anybody who plays this game is immune to the calculus of aesthetics. I haven't met one. Hell, we're playing a toy soldier game that has free movement and spiky jokers and terrain that we made out of fish tank terrain and GW trees and all of this. There's no reason to play this game if you do not have an aesthetic calculation. And I think that is the first part of understanding crazy ass takes, knowing that they could just have drawn the line in a place that is not useful for you. Again, it's not that they're wrong. It's that they see the world differently. So we got nothing else to talk about. If you have drawn the line at, well, I like this master, so he's the one I play. And I'm over here trying to discuss something in the context of the entire faction. Because for me, I want to play my whole faction. And what is aesthetically pleasing to me is also like trying different masters, trying different combos. I find list writing compelling. So I am not a, you know, mechanical player who is going to run things multiple times and try to get really good with one master. But I am no less aesthetic and interested in aesthetics if I'm trying to play 10 different masters because, oh, this seems cool today, or that seemed cool today, or I want to try that and see if I could be the first one to crack that and figure that out. That is no less aesthetic. But these two people are going to have difficulty in understanding the position the other person's coming from, especially if it's just, you know, in a reductive medium like in text and on AWP, on Discord, something like that. So to me, from that standpoint, being someone who's like playing the whole faction, I find the conversation of like matchup probabilities, like I'm sure if you listen to this podcast, you say heard me say like 60-40s and 55-45s and 80-20s. I find that conversation way more compelling because that is the conversation I'm interested in. That's the aesthetics that I'm interested in diving more into. To some people, they just want to know what has the most 60-40s in the game. And they're sort of interested in diving deep with one individual thing, right? Getting acquainted with every aspect of a master and its matchups with this versus that. Testing different elements of the keyword, different elements of the list. But, you know, it's still sort of couched in the idea of like, well, I'm not going to play a master who has 40-60s on average. I'm still going to play the 60-40 master, but I still enjoy reveling in being a one trick. You know, there are plenty of people in every form of game. Oh my gosh. In World of Warcraft, which I spent most of my high school playing, there was feral druids were crap for most of the expansion I was playing. But there was one feral druid who played and ganked probably 20 hours a day, and was the bane of the server. On general chat constantly, it's just people, big gank by prayer. Where's she at? I'm coming to get her. You know, all of this stuff. And that was a person who was obviously very fixated on the W. They ganked people constantly. They killed people constantly. But still, they played something that was pretty much objectively worse than other things. That person probably loved diving deep into being that thing. You know, there's an aesthetic victory there that's important. It's not just killing the person, it's killing the person with style. So that's the first thing for me. When you're playing a game, you know, you're trying to win. And we often use the casual versus competitive to mean something along the lines of like, this person cares about winning and this person doesn't. But to me, that's not right. Because the casual person still wants to win. It's just not the most important element in the calculus. They want to win while doing this, and they want to win while doing that. And they want to win in a visual manner that looks like this, because that's what's more important. That's what's first. And speaking of first, that kind of segues into my second point. So even on this gradient of mechanical wind versus aesthetic that I've sort of put forward, people differ in what they think leads to the actual mechanical wind, obviously. And I think if you can understand a person's philosophy there, you can understand a lot as well. Now, that might seem overly simple, but the way I think about Malifaux, and I often say that no one is good at this game, we're all pretty bad. What I mean by that is sort of that the amount of things within the game that are solved are very small. There's a lot more unknowns. And because of that, we get some wildly different philosophies in what is the most important thing. Because there are so many unknowns, the calculations are harder than they seem. The Malifaux scene is kind of like how MMA was like 15 years ago. Now, if you're not familiar, I mean, it's kind of only one of the only sports examples I could think of because it's one of the few that I followed for a long amount of time. But like 15 years ago, like UFC and the MMA scene was a lot about people almost arguing over what they thought was the best way to fight in a system where, you know, a relatively new system where different styles were sort of introduced with each other, right? So you would have a jiu-jitsu fighter and all he did was jiu-jitsu. He didn't have like a stand-up game at all. And then you'd get like famous fights where a jiu-jitsu fighter would literally lay on their back and just like beg someone to come down and fight, you know, roll with them. You'd have boxers who thought boxing was most important. They're trying to stand up, they get taken down, they get ground and pound. You have wrestlers who think wrestling is the most important, so they refuse to do anything other than shoot for takedowns the entire time, trying to get them on the ground so they could wrestle. You had all these different sort of styles coming in together. And instead, you know, people had to learn little bits from each one. But still, it was a sort of sideshow of like, okay, let's do this jiu-jitsu guy versus this stand-up guy. And let's do this knockout guy versus this volume of punching guy. Let's do this guy who does devastating leg kicks. This guy who can do versus this guy who head kicks people. You know, it was so much of a stylistic sort of mishmash. Let's throw it all together and see what comes out. And I think where the Malifaux meta is right now is pretty similar to that. That you have some people who are just wrestlers and some people who are just karate fighters. And we haven't sort of matured into what MMA is right now, where it's known that it's basically that everyone has to know everything. And everyone has to know a certain amount of everything, right? So you can't just be a jiu-jitsu guy because everyone knows sort of a threshold of like basic jiu-jitsu defense, so you're not going to get tapped out. So to me, the Malifaux meta is like that a lot. We haven't matured to the fact where everyone needs to know everything. We're in the stage where everyone is coming to the game with different schools of thought. And to that end, I would like to try and explain like my dojo, my theories of what I think is most important. I'm going to try and explain my jiu-jitsu of Malifaux. So to me, now obviously good stuff is good, bad stuff is bad, doing the right thing is good, doing the wrong thing is bad, whatever. But to me, the most important aspect of the game in terms of who wins and who loses is about the positioning dance. Now, I'm sure I'll come up with a better term for that in about 2 minutes. And often we've talked on this podcast about something that's sort of approximating that, you know, whether it's beatdown versus control, aggressive versus defensive. Basically, what it boils down to is at any point in a game of Malifaux, there is one person who is incentivized by an accelerated pace of combat. And then there's the other person who is winning. Like if the game stays as it is and combat does not accelerate further, I win. And the other person has to accelerate things. They have to speed up the pace of the game. Because most games are like positioning, fight. And then on turn 5, everyone scatters and goes and scores. That's your average game. So to me, that dance of understanding when you are losing because the combat is not accelerated enough, and understanding when you are winning because your opponent has not stepped on the gas, is the most important thing in predicting the victor. And not only do I find that the most important thing, I also find it the most interesting element of playing the game. If you show me evidence, you know, if you show me this game, that game, whatever, where that is not the case, I don't really care. And that sounds flippant, but no, this is my reality. Going back to that thing I said before where, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying we see the world so differently that we got nothing else to talk about. This is my reality, and it's what I'm most interested in engaging with. In fact, if you showed me evidence that the game was not this, and the game was more about selecting the right list, I would just quit the game. So before I go back into that, I'm just sort of expand on what I mean by sort of the positioning dance a little more. That's an awful term. But basically, you know, if I have a greater potential to score all my points at turn 5 with all the models on the board than you, then I'm sort of winning and I'm incentivized by slowing the combat down. You know, referring back to previous episodes, you do some oblique play, you have security in your points, you know, all that sort of situation. You are, you know, the control versus the beatdown, however you want to label it. And then if you're the person who has to accelerate things, you know, you're the beatdown. You're the person who has combat security. Yeah, da, 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 da. Semantics, I don't give a shit about semantics. Call it whatever you will. Basically, let's do a concrete example instead. Maybe that's a little clearer. So if we are in a game, if we sit down and I'm playing, let's see, what have I said that's a bad matchup in the past? Okay, so I'm playing Parker, you're playing Lucius. And that's a bad matchup for you. Because I have a shit ton of guns. They're all on plus flips. Your whole defense is negatives. You do some obeying, but that's not... I'm probably going to stay in a position where if you come out to obey me, you're out of concealment and you're going to get obliterated. Half of your, you know, some elements in your... If you picked Lucius, you're probably trying to drop ski markers. And my whole thing is that your ski markers make me fast. It's a pretty bad matchup. If you disagree... Just pretend it is. So I'm playing Parker. I am incentivized by an accelerated pace of combat because I know when we get down to it and we start grinding, I'm going to kill all your shit. I'm going to do that win condition 0 that we talked about before. Moreover, because I know it's a good matchup for me, I've taken Assassinate. I've taken Vendetta. I've taken Let Them Bleed. I've taken... schemes that incentivize me playing through my strengths. Because why would I play through anything else? Why would I play through my weakness? You, on the other hand, have correctly assessed that it is a poor matchup for you. So you are disincentivized by combat. You have taken Spread Them Out, even though I'm going to eat your scheme markers. You have taken, let's say, something like Bait and Switch, because you know I don't want to be in your deployment anyway because I'm guns. And... I'm going to run through you pretty good. So I'm probably going to be on your end of the board. You know, you're taking stuff that allows you to play more oblique. So from that point, then we do the dance, and the dance is more interesting because at any point, whoever is incentivized by an accelerated pace of combat can change. That's why the jokers are interesting, because jokers happen, black jokers happen, but also the positioning game can turn you being disadvantaged by combat into you being advantaged, right? If I triple walk all of my models into yours because I know I'm advantaged by accelerating the game, I'm no longer advantaged. I'm in your shit. And instead of taking a bunch of walk actions, you took some focus actions. You are able to charge 4 models onto one where all of my stuff is still trying to catch up to your stuff. And that game is constantly changing throughout the course of one game. That positioning sort of dance is constantly evolving. You'll reveal a scheme And then I'll realize, oh shit, I got to step on the gas. Or I'll reveal a scheme and you have to step on the gas, even though you previously were trying to play defensively. You were disincentivized by fighting stuff, fighting losing battles.
Right.
And to me, that is the most predictive element of who wins a Malifaux game, to me. If both players don't recognize who is incentivized by an accelerated pace of combat, then I think you're having a weird game. And it's probably actually the most normal game. The most normal game of Malifaux is one where both players, to use my MMA metaphor before, think they are knockout artists. There is no dance. And people, part of the reason why this is because matchup knowledge is a really hard thing to get. It requires a lot of time. So it takes a lot of reps to know that you have a 60-40 even. Let's say like an 80-20 because you know exactly the right move they can make to get themselves up to, you know, 30-70. But they need 10 games to understand that. They have to know that if they move their master up 5.5 inches, they're going to lose this game. And they have to know that they only move at 4 on turn 1. That requires a fuck ton of knowledge. And that's why the dance becomes a little hard sometimes. It becomes hard to see, right? It doesn't flush itself out sometimes. Sometimes you just get, we're going to slam at each other and fight until we see who won. And you almost have to do that 10 times before you even start to see the moves in the dance. And to my previous point, that is what is interesting to me. And that is what I want to see when I play Malifaux. And if you told me that that wasn't important, I just wouldn't play this game. If you told me that this game was about fighting each other and seeing who flips better cards, I would go play a GW game. I'll just roll dice instead. I don't really care that much about cards. If we're just going to run stuff at each other and just see what happens, right? That positioning game is what it keeps me coming back. So when you're thinking about my bad takes, when you're thinking about things that seem incomprehensible, because we seemingly have such a different worldview that we have nothing else to talk about, know that it comes from me not only thinking that is the most important element in predicting the win and predicting the aesthetics of the win that I want, but even if it wasn't, I wouldn't give a shit. And I think that applies to pretty much everyone. To certain people, list writing predicts a W the most. And if you told them otherwise, they would disagree with you. And if you told them otherwise, they wouldn't give a shit. Because what they're interested in is list writing. Which makes sense. It's a war game. You only get to play one game a week, maybe. So you get to write lists, you know, 5 times a week, something, you know, whenever you're taking a dump, something like that. So to those kind of people, doing stuff like, you know, thinking about, oh, well, Levy does irreducible, but Hoffman ignores irreducible with his torch. And then thinking about, you know, okay, well, if he declares Hoffman and I second master Levy in, you know, okay, well, I could still do the torch, but okay, now when he declares Levy, I'm going to second master in Hoffman and I'm going to build my list to have things that he can torch. And I'm going to send one of those into his face turn 1, but then he's just going to kill a top of activation turn 2. Like, that is someone's most important element in predicting who wins. I mean, you've seen enough posts about people's hands on AWP to know that certain people think that drawing the best hand is how you win the game. To certain people, it's about understanding the meta in terms of what is most likely to be popular and then dark horsing your way through tournaments in contrast to that meta. Because not only do you think it's most important and what would predict a win for you, but it's also something, you know, that aesthetically is pleasing, you know, to be this snowflake who no one saw coming, right? So that is basically the source of my stun lock when I read other people's takes, you know, personally. Like, I especially remember in the beginning of 3 seeing so many, like, people's Terra games and being like, why would Aeonus ever be there? Why is that model there? There's literally zero reason for it to ever be there. And then that person would be like, oh yeah, 172. It's like, well, works for you, which is weird, but it does not comport with like my philosophy of what I think is important. You know, I think it's important that I would never do that because it's implying that my opponent doesn't understand the dance that we're playing. And if they don't understand the dance, then we're not playing the game that I want to play. So even if you did win, I don't give a shit. And again, it's not to say it's wrong. It's to say, you see the world differently from me. We got nothing else to talk about. Because if you're in a world, if you're in a meta with six knockout artists, to use my previous metaphor, people who see the game as a run at each other and see who flips the cards the best. Not playing with that information is also incorrect. So yeah, I guess in summary, just think about when the next time you see something that doesn't make any sense, especially because on Sunday, or Saturday rather, Malifaux Burns is coming out and we're going to get every single, I think it's fair to say that this is Malifaux 3.5. Every master is getting not an upgrade like in 2, but a completely different version. In some cases, wildly different version. You're going to see some dog shit takes. So I implore you to think about, you know, where those could come from. Is it an aesthetic thing? Is it casual competitive? Is it just the fact that they see the game through a certain lens where only these things are important? And hopefully me describing what I think is important helps you understand, you know, how we see the world differently.
What are you doing in my swamp?
So, if you listen this far, you listen to my opinions this much, I'm just going to drop more opinions because I have this platform and people listen to our title drop episode at least. So, I'm going to use it. I'm not a play tester, but I'm a person who has been playing Explorers exclusively almost, you know, except for like 5 or 6 games. Well, no, I played Zoraida like 6 games, something like that, since the beginning of 2020. So, it's September 2021. I mean, that's... Is that it's 21 months. Holy shit. Of me playing Explorers. And it's been sort of a hot discussion around them because they're the new kids on the block, right? And there's with other models, there's other comparison points, right? You can say it's insane that Zoraida does this, but a person could always just say, well, she's always done that. So things don't seem that crazy. But now you got new abilities, new characters, which is most important, from Explorers that are defining new abilities that no one else has ever had before. And that just seems shocking to people. So I think, if not now, but soon, Weird is going to be contemplating how they're going to change the faction. And if people are listening, I would, in their playtesters, here is what I would do. This is so self-indulgent. First. So I would like to just sort of think about it in like 3 different tiers, right? Light touch, medium touch, heavy touch. Because with all the titles coming out, we are going to have a crazy new meta, which may make most of the stuff that seems OP in Explorers just nothing. So in that case, it would just need sort of a light touch. But depending on your thoughts, maybe you think Explorers are still overpowered. You need something like the heavy touch. So, first in the light touch category, I think the thing that has to happen first is the Archivist has to get nerfed. Not only is it good in the most cringe keyword of Cadmus, cringe is not the right word, but just sort of tedious, I would say, is a better description of Cadmus. It goes in too many lists too well, and that's because it has one of the best guns in the game. It has a 3-4-5, ignoring hard to kill and demise. Gun effectively for just the cost of, you know, 1 damage on something, and it has pretty much a leap as well. And Explorers, weirdly enough, do not have a lot of guns. They're almost all gate kept behind other masters, so guns are not something you can kind of just slide into a list if that's, you know, relevant for the matchup. And he has one of the best ones in the game. So he comes into other keywords super frequently. In fact, I think if you're playing Maxine without the Archivist, you're nuts, because her Archivist is one of the best ones. She gives him fast. She can give him all this other stuff. She supports stuff that supports him pretty well. You know, she draws cards. So he has to get nerfed. And I think it would be a mistake to nerf what makes him good in Cadmus and then leave the stuff that makes him good elsewhere. So to me, I think it would just be an easy fix. You take the stuff, you take all the text on his attack action that lets him draw a card unless you discard a tome or not, and you move that to the Killer Late Fees trigger, and you delete the Killer Late Fees trigger. That way, he can still draw cards within the keyword where the health cost of him attacking is less, is sort of less, but you're keeping the ability to get plus to initiative flips, which is too important to him, too important to the Nexus keyword to lose, right? Because I've played Hamlin plenty, and it's really skewing that you can sometimes just say, oh, well, I don't get to ever win initiative because of the crew I'm playing. And Cadmus could potentially have similar problems. So I would do that. Easy fix. He would not get taken out of keyword that much unless you really care about initiative. And I would not take him out of keyword ever again if that happened. So I think that would be a good change. I do not care about plus two to initiative that much to spend 9 stones on him. That's crazy. The other thing that needs to happen in sort of the light touch category, I feel, is a change to the Alpinist. So he's the mechanical goat that you've probably never seen. And you've probably never seen him because he has an aura ability that allows models to ignore terrain. But because it's an aura, it requires LOS. So a lot of people are not bringing him because he kind of doesn't work for a lot of terrain features. Because if you bring the goat so that you can move through a house, as soon as you're out of LOS of the goat, you can't move through the house anymore. So then what happens? You know, there's been lots of like rules discussions like, well, do you just teleport back? You know, da da da. I know you don't teleport forward. So what's going on here? So a change to the goat so that he actually functions, I think, is very much needed. And that's all I would do in the light touch category. I think that would change things significantly, change a lot of lists, and nerf Nexus enough. Now, the first change I'm going to put in the medium category could also go in the light touch category. And that is, so we're going to medium now. That is, eyes and ears should gain mindless. So for those of you who have been fortunate enough to not play against Cadmus, one of the issues with it is that it is so much bookkeeping. You have to track damage on like 5 different eyes and ears. You know, there's 3, you know, this, they all have 3 health. So, you know, it's not enough where one attack will kill them. And you're also pinging them multiple times. So it's often tracked with dice or something like that. And it could be very difficult to follow what your opponent is doing during all of this. Add to the fact that Nexus kind of plays different than it would seem like in the, like, if you look at the crew, the way it should function is, you know, it's putting out feelers, it's putting out espionage, it's slowly getting mites into people. Once they do, they own them. And owning them gives you certain advantages where you can manipulate them, you can send damage off to them, stuff like that. But ultimately, the culmination of owning them should be that, you know, Shelob gets in there and feasts on them. That should be how the crew plays and how it looks like it plays when you first read the cards. Now, the way the crew has kind of developed and has sort of been honed, you know, after it's been released to the wild and a lot more people can try it out, is what Nexus actually does is put out a bunch of webs, draw a bunch of cards, and summon a bunch of dudes, and basically doesn't do anything other than that. She never gets to the feasting phase because it's not needed. She just sort of like jerks off, summons dudes, draws cards so the Archivist can laser beam stuff, so the eyes and ears can be as annoying as possible. I'm sorry, the Shambling Nest can be as annoying as possible. And it kind of just doesn't play the way it should. And I think changing the archivist first would help getting it closer to like a lore-based playstyle. And then I think changing the eyes and ears, giving them mindless, would just really cut down on the amount of time it spent just, you know, just sort of jerking off with the crew. They have like a lure. It's on a stat 4. But if you summon 4 dudes that turn, you know, you get 8 tries at it. You know, maybe it's on concealment. You're flipping 2 cards. You know, you're deciding whether you want to cheat the lure. And it's actually really important, you know? It's very important if that lure goes off or if it doesn't, but the cabinets player doesn't care. And then the opponent may not have the choice of really cheating it, or they may not know if the lures are important or not. So it's super time consuming that all of these little dudes that you summon also get to activate the turn they're summoned. I mean, if I had my druthers, all non-summoning upgrade models that get some, like the generic summoning token should just say this model gains mindless. Just would not impact power level in mini masters and would just drastically cut down the amount of time is spent in games on just dirtle activations, which is, I mean, that stuff adds up a lot, not just the actions, but it's like, okay, you have how many models left? Okay, I have how many pass tokens now? You know, that kind of stuff. I would love for that change to happen. It just isn't as necessary, I feel, as, you know, the archivist change. The other thing I would like to see in the medium touch category, if we felt it was necessary, is probably the other model that gets complained about the most in the faction, which is the Intrepid Emissary, which is, you know, a take the hit tank with Def 7, you know, in the Aura of Courage, which lets it heal over, it's hard to kill. The thing about the Intrepid Emissary is it's very swingy. It's either like protecting everything, and you know, you're getting feels bad moments where you, it takes the hit on a model, it's Def 7, it cheats up, so it heals a point, which gets Mikhail to teleport base to base with it. You're within 2 inches of Mikhail, so you can't attack anything other than him, but you only have 1 inch melee, so it effectively just gave you slow. And you almost paralyzed a model by attacking with it. I think those combos are way more swingy than what it seems like the Emissary was designed for, which is protecting the leaders of a faction where their leaders are both very vulnerable and quite squishy. Like, a lot of the times it feels like an Emissary is attacks that I just have to bring him because I know my opponent is going to gun for this master. Hell, so the Gwissen, I think that's how you pronounce it, in Rezzers was just teased where it's, you know, a 6-stone take the hit model. I would probably trade the Intrepid Emissary for the Gwissen in a heartbeat. That way I would just have a smaller tax on my list so that my master just doesn't die on turn 2 and or turn 3 or whatever. But the other thing is that Aura of Courage is super important. So if I could have the Gwissen and the Intrepid Effigy, I would, I mean, like Jedza 2 is clearly designed with the Aura of Courage in mind. So if I could have the Effigy and the Gwissen, I would give you the Emissary in a heartbeat, Rezzard players. So all that in mind, I think if a nerf was due for the Emissary, I think you should do something like what happened to Fiona, where she used to have take the hit, and instead it changed to journalists within 2 of this model may not be the target of enemy actions if this model is a legal target. Give the Emissary that ability instead of take the hit and make it master models. So master models cannot be the target of attacks if this model is within 2. Gives you counterplay. If you push them out of 2, you know, it's fair game, but also gives explorers players that aura of courage, which is so important with some of these keywords that have hard to kill, and the Emissary itself. So those are the 2 nerfs I would do in the medium category in addition to the light touch stuff. The buff I think is needed is a buff to Kia. So Kia is a 10-stone model that if you compare it to other 10-stone models, she's just objectively bad. She's a 10-stone model whose bonus action is on a 5, I gain shielded 1. That's horrendous. She doesn't have access to a third attack like most, you know, beater models that actually get played. She has access to Irreducible, but it costs her both her bonus TN and she can only do it once effectively. The triggers are mid in terms of what you would want on a beater. Usually a trigger on a beater, you want something that sort of explodes. And she just has sort of supporty triggers. She has a gun that's interesting, but it's like, it's a 1-2-3 damage track. It has blast on each one of those damage, but it's pretty bad. I mean, she's 5-5 armor 1. If you compare her to every 10 stone model, I think maybe there's one or two that are worse than her. Maybe. But she's the henchman for a crew that hands out fast. Now, you could say that that is that she's sort of taxed by that master who has that ability, but that just means Maxine never brings her. I don't ever see a reason to bring her, especially now that Jedza 2 is irreducible. You know, there's the faction has access to ignoring armor now. McCabe Tube is like actually a beater now, and he is precise. That plus the technophile rule, I almost can't think of a single reason why you would ever use it. So I think it'd be cool to give her a little bit of a change in role so that she would see certain pools for Maxine, but wouldn't become an auto include. And I think most factions have access to activation control, but Explorers does not. So I think considering she's a technophile sort of electricity based model, it would be cool if maybe her gun gained that trigger to generate a pass token, or maybe technophile became, instead of drawing a card, gain a pass token. Something like that would be interesting, because then I would bring her in those activation control pools maybe. She still wouldn't see out of keyword beater play. Like if you need Ruthless, I think the Rex is better in most situations. I haven't done the exact math, but probably just not even bringing her is the best choice. Bringing no Ruthless and just hoping to top deck against Terrifying Crews is probably better than either of those. But currently she's pretty lackluster, needs something. All right, so that's light and medium. You know, we're kind of dealing with the versatiles. We're dealing with Nexus, which is the most complained about keyword. I think if you're going to heavy touch, you're probably going to dip into Ivan and Jedza. We're probably the next on sort of the chopping block if Weird decides to take two explorers with a hatchet. If that happens, I think there are a few like easy changes that would make life a little, make the masters way less good, but also still serve their role. We talked about it on our other episodes. That's the thing when the nerf like changes their role and makes them do what they're good at less, instead of opening up their weaknesses more, then I don't like those changes. So if Ivan needs a nerf, what I would do to him, drop Umbra from his keyword and give him the thing that Sandeep has where he can hire Umbra. So basically what that would do is still let him hire his keyword and stuff, but it would not allow other models that do things to Umbra to affect him, including his own action, which can be kind of triggering to people if you're getting your ass beat by Ivan, which is allows him to push a shadow marker or a friendly Umbra model, and it's a tactical action, so he could target himself. So even if you do get the Ivan lockdown, all this stuff, he can still just encroaching shadows himself, push him 6 inches, ignoring any models, push himself. So he can kind of just still go wherever he needs to be. That would also make it where Gibson can't hit him with the wrench to heal him too, which would lean more into his shtick of being an insane value printer. But if you get him, it's over. Because currently that's how Ivan functions, right? He's just printing crazy value every turn. But if you get a hold of him, it's game over because the rest of the crew doesn't do shit. So if Gibson couldn't heal him for drawing two cards as sort of a win condition, then that would lean more into that play style. So even he could be a value printer, but would have to play a lot safer. That might be too big of a nerf, but I don't know how it's going to shake up in title world. We haven't even seen like Maxine's title yet. I don't know. If there was a change to Jedza, I have no idea what it would be. I think it would probably be a nerf to Mikhail. People seem to like him, not like him. But I've started dropping Mikhail from my Jedza 1 list. I think the meta is eventually going to shake up where Jedza is going to be. I almost said irrelevant. I shouldn't say that. It's so funny. I get the most shit for saying Tara was competitively irrelevant on that GG1 episode. And I went back and I listened to it because that's not how I remember. I didn't remember it sounding bad. And I went and I listened to it. Oh, it does sound bad. Wait, why does this sound bad? It's because when we recorded that episode, we recorded for 5 hours and we lost 2 hours. So I had already said my whole thing about, like, Ray was like, oh, is Tara bad now? And I'm like, oh, no, Tara's not bad. I would say she's more like, you know, like kind of competitively irrelevant. Like previously in Outcast, if you weren't prepared for Levy and Tara, you were just dead. And now she's probably, you know, just son of a fine master. If you're not prepared for her, you'll still figure it out. Or you'll lose your first game and then you'll figure it out from there. And then in the re-record, Ray's like, GG1, talk to me about Tara. I'm like, oh, well, she's like competitive irrelevant. Holy shit. No wonder everyone gives me so much shit about this. But anyway, back to Jedza. I think nerfing Mikhail would probably make sense. I would do that in a way that would kind of side grade him, though. I think if you got rid of his ability to leap to healed models, not only would that get rid of the feels bad stuff where he leaps and then he's engaging you and then you kills your whole activation. But get rid of that, give him who cares, whatever, a different chronicle, but then give him movement 5 back, or because right now he's movement 4, give him movement 5. That would both make him less of a feels bad for the opponent, and I would like him a little more. Because right now he's kind of just a gotcha to me in certain ways. I mean, like he's obviously tanky, he's obviously a decent, you know, little beater. But I found in a lot of my Jedza games, my opponent, I mean, to talk previously, in the positioning dance, will just not engage with the bubble. So then I have to change my list to make ways to force you to engage with the bubble. So I'm often bringing stuff that can either do a lot of work for its cost while still, you know, eating life tokens. Because like investing too much in Mikhail often feels like a trap. Like I'm just standing there doing nothing. If my opponent decides to not engage with the bubble. Also, if my opponent can engage with the bubble, they can usually kill Mikhail just as easily as they would kill a Surveyor, weirdly enough, right? The stuff that can actually kill stuff in a Jedza crew kills Mikhail just as easy as it kills a Surveyor. So might as well just have a Surveyor or something like that, or a Grave Goo, something cheaper. So I don't think he's really... I don't know if he needs a nerf that much. He does. He is pretty good outside of keywords. So maybe that is evidence that he needs a nerf. But I think if you get rid of his heal teleport, so he has less synergy with Anya and he has less synergy with Ivan, and you just give him the move and he's just kind of like a solid little servant guy, you would have a more well-rounded model. So if we're also in the heavy touch, I think Corvus needs a buff of some sort. I don't care. Where I don't really like the model, but I don't think he's very good. So if he had something, just like a maybe change his bonus action to be something a little more relevant or something. And I think I think that leaves the faction pretty good. I think the only other thing that sort of stands out to me is the cryptologist, because I think he just missed the boat quite a bit. And whatever need Weird decides to fill, it could be done through the cryptologist, because if he got reworked, I don't think anyone would lose any sleep over it. Like right now, he kind of just sees playing Cadmus because it lets you create another Berserker Husk with his bonus action a turn. I don't really see a reason to bring him into McCabe that often. I've experimented with, you know, access to... You know, giving an obey, you know, like I've tried a couple builds where I build around the gun horses and McCabe one, and giving them an extra obey can be cute because it's any number of start of activation effects. So like if they're sitting on a corpse next to the emissary and then he has them resolve the start of activation effects, then they can gain a shield from the emissary. They can heal, they can draw a card. And then if you hit the trigger, you know, they can take another shot, which is... I don't know, it's pretty cute until you realize that the crew really wants masks. So having the card to cheat in that mask for the obey means that at best you're kind of doing this on one turn. So if he was reworked to just, I don't know, if it, when playtesters are looking at explorers and they're like, okay, we've done this, this, and this, but there's still this hole. I think just changing the cryptologist completely to fill whatever that hole is would be very interesting. Maybe it's the pass tokens hole, the activation control hole I was talking about. Maybe it's, I don't know, some sort of new support ability that we haven't seen before. Something like, I don't know. I just said that the faction has issues with range. So maybe it's like a support ability that lets you make one melee attack at, like once per activation can take a claw attack at range 12 gun or something. You know, in the lore is that he gives you a grappling hook or his extendo arm or something like that. You know, something like that would be really cool. Anyway, that's probably it. I think explorers are in a pretty decent place. I mean, like Beeb and Calypso are also the standout people that get played in too many keywords, but I don't know how easy fixing them would be. And I don't know if they need to be fixed. Like giving them a slight change is obviously huge because it trickles down over 6 AP effectively. But also it's a very expensive package that if you just kill Calypso becomes quite neutered. You can almost treat it as if it's a rider that when you get it down to half health loses a lot of abilities. If you think about it that way, it becomes way more tolerable. But it is just a very nice little piece that's going to see a lot of out of keyword play for the foreseeable future. We haven't even seen what Maxine 2 does yet at this point. So I don't know. All right, that's it. Thanks for joining in to my opinion-sode. Hope you enjoyed it. Yeah, later.